Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrrh, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrrh Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. Last week while I was driving to the clinic, I happened to be listening to a show called Only a Game, a sports show, on Vermont Public Radio. And after what seemed like an endless discussion of more bowl games than I ever knew even existed, they did a segment on what used to be called the Rodent Olympics that takes place out in Kansas somewhere. It's no longer called the Rodent Olympics. It's called something like, Extreme Rodent, Extreme, or it used to be called the Rat Olympics, and now I think it's the Extreme Rat Challenge or something, because the Olympic Committee, of all things, objected to the previous name. What it consists of is a final, really, for students who are taking a psychology course in what psychologists refer to as learning theory. As part of their laboratory, each student is given a rat, and the student has to teach the rat to do things like walk a rope, leap across a gap, climb a wall. The competition is held in a large hall, and spectators are allowed to come, and then there's a panel of judges who judge the students based on their rat's performance and their handling of the situation. What I found particularly interesting about the segment were the interviews with the students about their rats and teaching them. It was obvious that some of these kids really liked their rats. They and the rat had formed a team, and it was the two of them. This, on one hand, didn't surprise me, because all I know about the human-animal bond. But on the other hand, I wondered, how would these kids be judged? Would they lose points because they cared about these animals? Theoretically, relative to behavioralism, they should, because there is no place in that type of training for any kind of relationship between the trainer and the animal. And there were students that were interviewed, and you could tell that liking their particular rat just wasn't part of the equation, that this was a job for them, this is what they were supposed to do, and that's how they were going to do it. That double standard has always fascinated me. And it got me thinking about just some other things, one of which is my own neighborhood Skinner box. Below my house, across the road, is what is currently called a mobile home, but what in the past we would have called a trailer. To me, this thing is definitely like a trailer. Years ago, the landowner dragged this thing in and deposited it, not unlike a beach turquoise and white whale, in the field below me. And there was a period when the trailer was rented out to various individuals. These individuals invariably had incessantly barking dogs, so much so that I often wondered if when one tenant moved out and the trailer was put up for rental again, if the owner actually ran an ad that said, for rent, trailer must have incessantly barking dog. Because of this, and because of my location above the trailer, the sound comes right up. I mean, it's like, you know, like a Roman amphitheater here. And one of my favorite tenants, and I say this strictly from an ethological point of view, was a man who I decided probably belonged to the Witness Protection Program, because I rarely saw him. But he was an excellent example of how when we think we're training dogs, dogs are training us. It's a dance. We're partners. It's not elevated teacher, denigrated student. It's not villain victim. It's a dance. No matter how bizarre the results are, it is a dance. Let me set the scene for this. The reason I thought this guy possibly was part of some witness protection program is because the first thing he did was to set up a motion-sensitive light, big spotlight on the trailer, and he also had a gun, some sort of rifle-type thing that he would fire off occasionally. And he had this black labby mix dog with one of those hysterical screaming barks who wandered around outside. If that dog was ever inside, I never saw the dog inside, and yet the dog wasn't tied. So the dog chose to hang around for some reason. So what would happen after dark is that the dog, who normally hung out on the back side of the trailer overlooking the river, would wander to the front of the trailer, and when she did, and I have no idea if this was a female dog, but it just always struck me that it was female, she would trigger the light. And when the light went on, it would scare her, and she would start to bark. And then the light and her barking would scare her owner, and he would come flying out the front door of the trailer and fire his gun. And that would scare the dog, who would run to the back of the trailer, and when she did that, the light would go off, and then he would go back inside. And this might happen sometimes two or three times a night. It would have bothered me if it wasn't so doggone fascinating. You know, it was hard to figure out which one of them was the lower life form. Or maybe they were equal. And I wondered what goes through this dog's mind. I mean, they were obviously both very frightened individuals. I suspect he might have been drinking. I don't know that. Maybe his dog was drinking. I don't know. I mean, you know, and why did the dog stay there? I mean, the dog could have left. But it just told me a lot about learning, how it's impossible not to be changed by those we teach any more than those we teach can go unchanged by that interaction. Whether they learn what we want them to learn or whether we learn what they want us to learn. So it's another one of those cases that some forms of science have chosen to represent as arising from a hierarchy, when in fact those who are involved in it choose to accept the roles that have been given to them. I wish I could tell you who won the extreme rat competition. I don't know. I do hope that it was someone who really liked his or her rat. And if it was someone who somehow managed to maintain the distance that behavioralism and instrumental learning and classical conditioning demands, I do hope that he or she at least cared enough to thank that rat for learning.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore, by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Katova Arts, www.katova.com.